Fantastic to be back with you guys. I spent the last couple weeks away on vacation with my family. Last week, we went to Dayton, Ohio to see all of my wife's extended family, which is always an absolute blast. But before that, we went down to the coast to have a beach vacation with my dad. So it was my wife, my son, me, him, and it was just an absolute blast. And I was so excited because I was like, oh, it's great. We're going to have a beach vacation. And I forgot like the most important thing, which is that the beach is the absolute worst. Like, it's terrible. And I know somebody out there is like, no, Jimmy, the beach, it's paradise. No, it's not. All right. If you believed it was paradise, you wouldn't have to spend all your time at the beach trying to keep as much beach away from you as possible. All right. Because like we don't want to get sand on us. Right. And like we can't go into the water because we don't want to get salt water in our hair, I'm told. And like there's all these different things that we're like the beach is not actually fun. But then you go away and you think, oh, that was wonderful. I want to go back. The only exception to this is toddlers, because toddlers think that the beach is amazing and nothing could ever stop them, I thought, because my son had an amazing time on the beach for about 45 minutes, and after 45 minutes, he was playing in the water, and all of a sudden, he starts screaming, because he got stung by a jellyfish, which was not how I wanted to end that day at the beach, but that's how it was, right? So we get him, you know, taken inside to, you know, like take care of the wound, and somebody in here is thinking, like, did you do the thing? No, we didn't. Google it. That's not, you don't know. It's warm water and cortisone cream. But then, like, he doesn't want to go back to the beach the rest of the time. And, like, it was, as funny as that is, it was heartbreaking, right? Like, seeing my son just, like, in pain there and be like, how do I heal him? How do I provide for him any level of comfort in this time? I've kept going back to that story, especially in light of today's sermon, because we're still in this series, we're talking about Jesus's good news, and we're looking at all these different interactions that Jesus had with just strangers and random people throughout the Gospels. And today, we're going to actually look at one of the most famous healing narratives of the Gospels, because Jesus was first and foremost a man who worked to heal. And so we're going to look at this story, which comes as Jesus and his disciples are on their way. They've been called to go and help this the daughter of this leader whose daughter is about to die. And they're like, Jesus, if you come, you can heal her. So Jesus and his disciples are on their way. And while on their way, they get stopped. And this is what happens. It says, as Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. Who touched me? Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you. And Jesus said, someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me. And then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. And then Jesus said to her, Daughter, your faith has healed you. Now go in peace. Now the context of that passage is incredibly important. So, this woman had been bleeding for several years. Now, we understand that now historically as she was experiencing menstrual bleeding for years. And why this is so critical is because in Old Testament tradition, in Old Testament law, a woman who was experiencing menstrual bleeding was considered unclean. So she could not be around any of the rest of society. So she couldn't be around her family, she couldn't be around her friends, because it was believed that anybody or anything she touched would also be seen as unclean in the eyes of God. Now, also context of that is really important. In Old Testament law, you basically have three categories of law. You have laws that help us not cause harm towards God, right? So don't worship other gods, you only have one. God, that's the one you should worship. We have laws that are civil laws, right? They're ones that prevent us from harming each other. Don't steal from each other. That's not good. And then you have a third category. These are ceremonial laws. These are laws that don't necessarily cause harm towards other people or towards God, but they made the Israelites a distinct people. separate from the rest of the world. So these were laws like you could only wear a certain type of clothing. And that way, if anybody saw someone wearing that type of clothing, they knew that this was an Israelite. This was one of the followers of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And this law that that caused women to separate themselves was one of those laws. And so these were laws that were still being followed at this time. And so you have this woman who for years has been unable to interact with any of the people she loves. And you got to, like, when you put yourself in the mindset of that, you start to imagine just, like, how desperate she would have gotten. How desperate she would have been to just have any level of relationship and communication and interaction with another human being. And all of a sudden, she hears of this guy who's going around and he's healing people. And she knows in her heart, like, if I can just go touch even the hem of his cloak, I will be healed. But more importantly, like, I can have my life back. And so this is what she does, and the stakes of this are incredibly high, because, like, while that's, like, the potential reward, honestly, like, if she gets recognized or caught, like, she's probably getting thrown in jail or completely exiled altogether with no hope of ever returning. And even if she doesn't get caught, there's no guarantee. Like, what if this Jesus guy isn't who he says he is? What if he doesn't want to heal me? She knows that she can be healed if she can just touch his cloak. But what if he doesn't want to? And that's where his response is absolutely phenomenal. Because the first thing that he does, you'll notice, like, what it is that actually heals her. He looks at her and he goes, like, listen, daughter, it's your faith that healed you. The whole, like, touching my cloak thing, you made that up in your head. Like, there was nothing in anywhere that said that you needed to do that. But it was your faith that actually allowed you to be healed. But the incredible part to me is the part where he's like, who touched me? Because, like, again, there's people everywhere. Like, Peter's not wrong to be like, Jesus, like, there probably a lot of people touched you, right? Like, there's a big crowd. And he's like, no, somebody touched me. And you think about that, and the only reason why he would ask that is for a few options. Option one is if he has a limited amount of power. And his power is already, like, reserved for certain people. And now, like, that woman stole somebody else's healing. And, like, if that's the case, God's not all-powerful. God has a limited amount of power. So you can, like, get rid of that one. So if it's not that option, then the question is, why would he take the time to seek her out and talk to her? And it's because it wasn't just about the physical healing. Because if all Jesus was trying to do was to physically heal people, then who cares who touched them? Just go heal everybody, it's fine. No, but he has a conversation with her. And two things happen as a result of that conversation. The first is he talks to her in front of everybody. And so everyone has an opportunity to see that this woman who they have all chastised, they have all cast out, they have all ignored for years is now right in the eyes of God. And if she's right in the eyes of God, then they sure as heck better be right in the eyes of all of them as well. So he's healed her from a communal perspective. He's healed her ability to have relationships with other human beings. But more importantly, he looks at her and has a real conversation with the woman. He looks at her and hears her story. He sees her. It's funny because, like, you think about that, and, like, in that way, he's providing, like, this emotional healing, this spiritual healing, this soulful healing. This healing that's, like, actually deep down what we truly need. Because, like, in the reality of it all, right, like physical healing is great, but, like, every one of our bodies is eventually going to fail. And so all the physical healing we get is really nice, but, like, in the end, it's all for naught. Because in the end, our bodies break down. It's inevitable. But communal healing, emotional healing, that doesn't have to. And it's funny because that's the healing that we truly actually need. Now, I think about, like, the contrast to my son's, like, jellyfish story with a story that also happened while swimming just a few weeks before that. We were at a neighborhood pool, and we're there. We're having a grand old time. He's swimming. He's having a blast. And our neighbors show up, and they've got a little girl who's, I don't know, probably 4 to 6 months or so older than Max. So they've like known each other and been friends ever since they were both born. And that's really cute and sweet. And she had brought a friend of hers from preschool that like Max didn't know. And so they're like playing, and Max like goes up to her and is like, "Hey, can we play together?" And this little girl looks at my son and is like, "No, we don't want to play with you. You can go away now." And I don't know if any of you have ever wanted to hit a three-year-old girl. I didn't, because I know I shouldn't, but like in that moment, I was like, did you just say that to my boy? And like, I get it, she's three, she doesn't know, right? Like she doesn't have social awareness. She was just like, we're playing a game, it's a game with us, we don't need anybody else in. She would have said no to anybody. But my son doesn't know that. All he knows is they don't want to play with me, and they don't want me around. And he comes over and he crawls in our lap and he's like, he's actually in tears. It's like one of the saddest moments. And I'm just like, and all I want to do is fix the problem, right? Like, all I want to do is fix the problem. And I'm so grateful that Kristen is there because she actually takes time to just sit and listen to hear, right? This is every male and female in the world, right? Like, I want to fix the problem and she actually wants to do something deeper that's better, right? Because there was no actually fixing it. What he needed was for somebody to just see him and care for him. What he needed was for somebody to heal him emotionally and soulfully. And this is why our hearts are so desperate for that. This is why that's not something that only happens when we're 3 years old. See, 50% of high school students feel as though they don't belong in the world, that they don't have a place or a community in their school. 65% of college students choose a university based upon where they believe they will have a community that actually cares about them for the first time. 75% of employees in the workplace, regardless of industry, feel as though nobody in their office would care about them if they left. 95% of people in a marriage at some point feel as though their spouse does not understand them or recognize the amount of work that they have put into it. We are all victims of this feeling as though we don't belong. And the world gives us all these things that can help it. And all of it still leaves us a little bit empty. And it's why this woman goes so desperately to find Jesus, because she believes that like he can actually heal and fix the problem beyond that. This is why in the book of John, when he's talking to his disciples, he has this moment, this really short little piece where he says this. He says, "Now is the time for judgment on this world. Now the prince of this world will be driven out. And I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself." He said this to show that the kind of death he was going to die. But he also says it to explain what's going to happen. When I'm lifted up, he's talking about getting up on the cross. But he says, all people will be drawn to me. John Wesley, a famous theologian, this was one of the basis of his understanding of prevenient grace. And what that meant is that God's grace was upon people before we recognize it ourselves. What that woman did to go seek out Jesus, that was phenomenal. Absolutely was. We got to understand that Jesus was already working in her heart before she recognized it herself. Because God, even before we come to understand our desperate need for God, is actively pushing us towards a place where we might finally be able to recognize that deep need. Because it is universal, and there is only one cure. And it's the one that got on the cross. And the big question is, okay, well, like, if that's the truth, then why? Then why don't we experience it? If all of us have this deep need for emotional healing, if all of us have this deep need for communal healing, to come back together and to actually be just this unified creation of God, why don't we experience it? And frankly, it's because we get in our own ways. Now, don't get me wrong, like, I believe that, like, there is hurt that exists in the world. Like, I do believe at some point my son is going to feel as though his parents don't care about him. Now, whether or not that's true is a different conversation, but I believe at some point he will be an angsty teenager, and he will look at me, and he will look at his mom, and he will say, "You don't understand me, you don't care about me." And my genuine prayer for him in that moment is twofold. The first is that that's not true. My genuine prayer is that we are not at that place and he's just having a really rough day. But more importantly than that is I pray that he knows that there is always a God who cares about him, and he hasn't begun to tell himself some sort of lie that is that falsity. Because every time we tell ourselves some sort of false narrative about God and about our need for healing, that's when we actually strip it away from ourselves. One of those false narratives that we can easily say is, we can talk about how great we are. We can talk about how, like, listen, we're awesome. I don't need anything. God can focus on other people. In fact, God needs to focus on other people. If you've seen other people, they're the worst. I'm good. And frankly, like, church leaders are, we're a part of that. Like, John Wesley, right, dude, like, started a whole denomination. This dude once legit did not give a woman communion because she wouldn't go on a date with him, all right? That's a true story. So her name was Sophie, all right? And he and Sophie met in Georgia, and, like, he was a boy, she was a girl. Like, you guys can figure it out, right? Like, they, like, liked each other. But he has this mentality of, oh, I can't, and I'm married to the church, I'm married to my job, I can't be in a relationship with you. And it's just like, John, like, chill, all right? Just, like, take the girl out on a date. And she finally is like, listen, if you're not going to go on a date with me, then, like, I'm just going to go find somebody else. She gets that Beyonce energy, right? She's like, I could have another you in a minute. Matter of fact, he'll be here in a minute. And that's exactly what happens, right? Is like, she gets another guy and she decides she wants to marry him. And John Wesley decides to be a chump. And he's like, God's really telling me that, like, for your spiritual well-being, you shouldn't marry him. And you're like, John, you don't look good in this moment. And so she still marries him. And God, then John Wesley's like, God has called upon me to rebuke you and to not serve you communion. And so he gets arrested and he gets shipped off from Georgia back to England. And, like, we all get it, right? Because he was being a bit of a chump. And in that, all he needed was to actually realize that he was the one who needed the communion far more than she did. She wasn't the one in that moment that needed healing. His heart needed healing. And so John Wesley, he actually gets a little bit older and he starts actually falling into this second false narrative we tell ourselves in our head, which is this idea that God can't save us. God can't heal us. Does God know the things I've done? Does God understand the depths to which I have failed, the depths to which I have harmed other human beings and harmed God? Like, God can't do this for me. Or, you know, God, I know you need it, but, like, listen, you should focus on other people. Like, I'm a lost cause. Focus on the ones you can actually save. And John Wesley actually gets to this part himself too, right? Where he actually gets to this place and he begins to believe he doesn't truly have faith. He begins to believe that because he doesn't have ample enough faith, that God doesn't have the ability to save him. And finally, his friend Peter Bowler looks at him and says, even if you don't have faith right now, it doesn't mean that God's not working in you. Even if you don't have faith, your job right now is to go out and to live out your faith, because that is what will actually give it to you. And once you have faith, then you will start preaching it that much more earnestly. Preach faith until you have it, and then once you have it, you will preach it with a full understanding of who God is and what God is doing. And so John Wesley decides to start doing this, and he comes to this understanding of what's actually possible. And if you need a better example of that, you look no further than the fact that, like, the man who hung on the cross next to Jesus, the literal very first example of a deathbed confessional, was accepted. And so clearly, there is not a point at which we are past acceptance of God. There is not a crime on which we are unable to be healed from our need for God's grace. There is no way in which God is unable to heal us emotionally, physically, spiritually, and communally. And it is never too late, because he looks at that man who's hanging on the cross and is minutes from his own death, and he says, today you will be in paradise. Today you are in paradise, because the reality is that paradise is actually available for us now, and that is the real end goal. God's end goal isn't just to heal us. God's end goal isn't just to make us right. It's because God's trying to take us to paradise, and frankly, we can't go there unless we've been healed first. God's healing us so that we can actually experience paradise. And the fact of the matter is it's not something that we have to wait until death to experience. It's something we can have today. It's something we can have today. And so as the band is going to come back up and we're going to sing one last song, what I want to inspire everybody to do is take an opportunity to ask yourself, what is that thing that you truly need healing for? That's probably going to take less time to figure out. The harder one is, do I actually believe God can do it? When we sing that song of you are more than able, who am I to deny what the Lord can do? Do we believe it? Because if we can believe it, then we'll experience what that woman did. It's her faith that healed her. Let's pray. Gracious and loving God, you came into this world to heal it. You came into this world to heal us. And so, God, I ask that you provide for us healing. That healing might come through our faith. Let us experience paradise in this world. Let us experience paradise the way that you've designed it to be. It's your holy name we pray. Amen.